This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. 4 years ago, the world was on the brink of a historic shutdown. The coronavirus was rapidly spreading, and by March 2020, American cities and states began issuing quarantine orders to stop the spread of COVID-19. Families already living in precarity stood on the edge of financial collapse as they were laid off or had to find childcare for kids stuck at home. Then something miraculous happened. The US government stepped in and began sending payments and unemployment checks to Americans all over the country. Far from falling deeper into debt, many people actually paid off debts and found some measure of financial stability. That story holds many lessons, and writing about it is Scott Fulford in his new book, The Pandemic Paradox. Scott is senior economist at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and author of The Pandemic Paradox, How the COVID Crisis Made Americans More Financially Secure. He also led the development of the Bureau's Making Ends Meet survey since 2019 that asks questions about real and perceived financial challenges facing ordinary American families. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Thank you so much for having me. And I should add, I'm not representing this CFPB at this time.
Absolutely. So this idea that the government steps in to help families when disaster strikes is something that we can look back now and think, of course, that was the expected thing to do. That was the right thing to do. That is the role of government. But in those early months, facing this economic collapse, it wasn't clear, was it, that the government would actually step in and do the right things? Because during the Great Recession, it didn't do enough. And so that moment in early 2020, what were you thinking about as you wondered if the government was going to step in and help people out?
Well, I was terrified. And I was terrified for several reasons. First, of course, there was a new virus going around, and that was a pretty scary thing. I was scared because my kids were at home and I was trying to figure out how to deal with having a job and kids and trying to keep them learning and entertained. And then, as an economist, what I do is I study how people make ends meet, what their incomes come in, what problems they have. And one of the things that I had been really focusing on was the number of people who really didn't have a big financial cushion. So a survey I ran in 2019 found that something like 40% of American households, if they lost their main source of income, would have to cut back on expenses within a month. And so as the unemployment started to increase in the middle of March 2020, it really looked like there was going to be this financial apocalypse for many families. And so it was really a terrifying time for me, both personally, for many people personally, but for me as an economist thinking about what was going to happen more broadly.
So when we then saw the government actually stepping in, there were a variety of ways in which people got help, right? There was the unemployment checks that people who were laid off got that were more generous than before. There was the CARES Act. Give us a sense of what sort of government help actually came about. And I know there were multiple overlapping programs, right?
Well, in some ways, yes. First, there were lots of overlapping programs. And one of the reasons to write a book is to sort of help piece together all of the different pieces that were going. But I think there were approximately three big groups. So one was there was just expanded unemployment. And so that had a bunch of different things. But one of the biggest was it expanded unemployment insurance to more people. So people who were doing gig work and self-employed who wouldn't otherwise be eligible. It made people eligible for longer, and it also extended the amount, gave more per week. And so there was actually a period for the first several months of the pandemic when people who were unemployed were on average earning more than they had been earning when they were employed, which was created some complex unfairness, but really does give a sense of the extent of it. So that was unemployment. We also just sent money to almost everybody. That was the economic impact payments or stimulus checks, as they were sometimes called. And so that was just money that sort of went out starting in middle of April. But then we sent out some more checks in early January of 2021 and a whole nother set of checks in March 2021. And then there was the pandemic unemployment, the pardon me, the Paycheck Protection Program, which gave money to a lot of small businesses. And those were the three biggest things, but there were lots of other pieces that added up to being a huge amount of money that the government spent over the next approximately year to help the economy deal with the effects of COVID.
In your book, you tell us a story of a woman named Sophia. It's one thing to look at these programs and policies in a macro sense, through statistics. It's another to see the impact on real people, real families. Tell us a little bit about Sophia's story as an illustration of how life-saving, how important it was for families to receive these various forms of help from the government.
Sure. Well, I should first add that Sophia was respondent to our survey, but Sophia is not her real name. I don't know her real name. She was our anonymous respondent, but she responded several times. And so with the detail that we have in our surveys, we're really able to understand really deeply her financial both ups and downs. So in the year up to the pandemic, Sophia had been kind of on the edge. So she's married, has some kids, they have a house, but they were always a little bit kind of just barely making it, had some overdrafts, didn't have much money in the bank, and had some shocks. So I think there was a death in the family, and so that had some big expenses. So come March, she loses her job. And so suddenly she's one of those 40% of the families where they just don't have a lot to get by on. And they missed a mortgage payment. And anyone who remembers what happened in 2008, 2009, 2010 knows once you start down that mortgage payment, missing mortgage payment, it was the house. And suddenly all of this financial, at least balance that maybe you've achieved can come crashing down. But it turns out that she applied for unemployment insurance and started getting unemployment insurance, and they never missed a mortgage payment again. And her self-described financial well-being actually went up somewhat between June 2019, when she'd be having some real problems, and the next year in June 2020, which was a surprising thing for many, many people, that they actually started feeling better after several months of the pandemic about their finances.
And hence the word paradox. And of
Hence the
course,
word paradox.
there were differences even before the pandemic hit. There were some serious differences along racial lines in terms of how families were able to make ends meet during the pandemic and as these programs started to unfold. Did you see some of the racial wealth gaps lessen a little bit?
Yes and no. And I apologize, that's a very economist answer. The short answer is many people at the bottom end of the wealth distribution did well in the sense that all of this economic help that went out, the unemployment insurance, the economic impact payments, and then frankly, just that many people's jobs were working was in demand, employees were in demand, meant that many people who were earning low wages or were financially precarious actually were doing much better. At the same point, the stock market actually did well after the first several months. And so economic wealth inequality increased in some ways, but the important part is that the bottom end of that distribution really substantially increased, really substantially, almost doubled at the overall wealth. And things like credit card debt went way down as many people were able to pay off really long-standing debts.
And so we've had a lot of these programs start to expire. After many of them expired, what happened? Did we see the racial wealth gap go back the way it was? Did the financial precarity of pre-pandemic America return? And all of this is so ironic because it was, the pandemic was supposed to have triggered an economic collapse, but it was the opposite because the government took action. And with the pandemic, officially declared over, that financial precarity returned, it seems. Is that what happened?
In many cases, yes. Although I think whether it's returned is, it's been a slow return. So over the last 2 years, We've seen sort of a slow increase in credit card debt, for example, in delinquencies on various credit products, a slow decline in people's self-perceived financial well-being, an increase in difficulty paying bills or expenses. All these things are sort of returning, and they're really returning to where they were in approximately 2019. And I think the thing to think about is that 2019 was actually a pretty good economy, too. It's just that there were a lot of people who were financially very precarious. So effectively, we've gone from a place where there was a lot less financial insecurity, many people were just better off financially, to a place where that's not true anymore. It's not necessarily worse than it was, but it's not necessarily better. And I think there are some parts of society that have really been hurting over the last several years. Renters in particular have faced fairly substantial rent increases. That's been part of inflation, but haven't seen the same sort of increases in, for example, housing prices that homeowners have seen. And so are really kind of facing kind of that double edge of paying more, but not having an asset that's going up. And I think that that's been really hard. There's a little bit of a balance. It's not quite clear whether the racial wealth gap has changed substantially over the last 2 years. I think that's kind of a complicated thing. But in general, the less wealthy, less high income part of society has been having a harder time over the last several years as many of these programs end. Just as an example, as the child tax credit from the American Rescue Plan wore off, very predictably, child poverty increased quite substantially.
Well, speaking of the child tax credit, it's in the news, and we are now seeing a deal that was just struck this week as you and I are talking, a $78 billion package in Congress to revive an expansion of the child tax credit. First of all, do you think it's actually going to happen? There's still a lot of political hurdles. And second of all, can making this expanded child tax credit permanent be an important bulwark against, bankruptcy, against that very, very stressful position that so many American families are in, because their jobs just simply don't pay enough?
Well, so first, I can't I have no prediction on whether what the political fate of it, but it would be really exciting to see that come back, because I think one of the things that the pandemic showed is that we actually can provide good help to those who need it, and it can make a really big difference in people's lives. And it can make a difference in ways that are sort of surprising. So let me take one, because I think it's something that many people don't think about. But one of the things that was really exciting that happened over the several years sort of following the pandemic was there was an explosion of new businesses created. And a lot of the evidence points to those new businesses being started disproportionately by African Americans, by Hispanics, people who've often had difficulty raising capital to start businesses. But because they had economic impact payments, because they'd been working from home, because they'd been saving a lot, they had the wherewithal to sort of get their new idea off the ground. And so there's a sense in which just providing greater economic security to more people, and of course, particularly to children who benefit in many ways the most and over the long term from it, can really even increase economic growth, not just help the individual people.
And so let's actually be explicit about the lessons learned from the pandemic and the programs that the government passed. It shouldn't have taken a global pandemic for someone like Sophia to be able to pay off her credit card debt, for her to be able to not worry about living hand to mouth as she supposedly was living before the pandemic hit, right? What are the ways in which the lessons of the pandemic can be applied in general to strengthen the American economy? If we agree that an economy's goal is to ensure that the largest number of people thrive, then it's currently failing. And so what lessons from the pandemic can we apply to making the economy work for us all?
Well, I think one of the most obvious is, in some senses, somewhat boringly, just better unemployment insurance. So let me break that down a little bit. First, most states provide too little replacement income. So something like 50% is where the modal state is. And it turns out that that's just economically much less than it should be, that you should replace more, perhaps not 100% or more than 100%, which was in the CARES Act for a while, but more. And what that means is that means that people who are unemployed aren't facing the sort of the devastation, the financial real worry that that can cause. And the second thing that that does is it means that people just are able to be a little bit more, have more power with their employees and so de employers, and so demand more from their employers, both wages but also working conditions. And so one of the things that I think came out very strongly from the pandemic experience was just the benefits to having a really strong labor market, which can be supported by having a better unemployment insurance system, among other things. That's not the only thing that could do, but in some ways that gets money directly to people who are going to be having financial problems in a straightforward way. There are lots of other policies that could help, but I think that that's a really, it's a straightforward one, partly because it also has big macro consequences. It means that when there's a downturn, and there will be a downturn eventually, of course, we hope it will happen far in the future, but when there is a downturn, people who are unemployed have money to spend, and so the downturn will be less. And so there are lots and lots of really good consequences of having a better unemployment insurance system.
Did the benefits that families received during the pandemic also give them a sense of what they deserved and perhaps fuel the labor agitation that we're seeing today, this demand for better wages, for more job security, for more reliable hours and better working conditions? You know, all of that seemed to come from nowhere for corporations, at least, as the pandemic lockdowns eased. And I'm wondering if the fact that people did have a minute to breathe, because they had some financial backing, were those two things linked?
I believe so. And there's a deep economic reason, basically, that if you are desperate, you're going to take any job, no matter how awful it is and no matter how bad the wages are. Whereas if you've got some financial backing, then you can look around for a better job. And so it's only employers who are offering good jobs at good pay that are going to attract workers. And that just pushes pressure on all of the bad jobs out there. So there was a great example that I love of the Burger King in Nebraska, whose employees all quit one morning because they just had been it had just gotten too bad, and they have a great sign of "We quit. We apologize for the inconvenience." A very very Midwestern sentiment. And but it really was emblematic that all of the people, as journalists followed them, they all ended up with better jobs, or some of them went back to school and then ended up with better jobs. And so there was a moment there where both the financial security that many people had allowed them to quit or look for another job, or it allowed them to push for their employer to give them a better sense. We've seen some of the same thing happen with return to office mandates, as employers have demanded employees come back and have been forced to accommodate employees every time because many employees don't want to come back to the office full time.
Many Americans seem to have seen the benefits. The question is, do the lawmakers, the ones who hold the purse strings, see these benefits, learn these lessons from the pandemic? I imagine that's why you wrote your book, The Pandemic Paradox.
Well, and also just to understand, not everything worked as well as I think we would have liked it to. We gave a lot of money to small businesses. It turned out that that didn't have nearly as big an economic impact as we might have liked. Some of it was valuable, but a lot of it probably wasn't. And it's worth making sure that we're thinking through when is the value really worth the money, and when perhaps was it not.
Well, Scott, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you with your book. I imagine that it's available in bookstores everywhere.
It is out from Princeton University Press, The Pandemic Paradox: How the COVID Crisis Made Americans More Financially Secure, and it's available in bookstores everywhere.
Thank you so much, Scott. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
My guest is Scott Fulford, author of The Pandemic Paradox, How the COVID Crisis Made Americans More Financially Secure. And we've been discussing this book. Scott is also senior economist at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is Rising Up. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and the host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.